All right, thank you everyone for joining us for the next in our series of the MHP podcast. I have once again Dr. Britt Peterson, who works with Mission Psychiatry and has been very gracious in helping us with our pilot with curbside consultation, which is growing in popularity. Certainly have received several emails now with folks very excited about the opportunity. So I appreciate your time, Britt, coming with us again.
Thanks, Rob. Nice to talk to you again.
So last time we kind of left off and wanted to come back talking more about mood disorders in the elderly. And, you know, we spent some time talking about the relationship of mood disorders and the medical conditions that our patients suffer. But I think now getting a little bit more concrete about how we appropriately screen and identify folks with mood disorders in the Medicare population. So anxious to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, I think we talked last time a little bit about using a good item, the PHQ-2, as kind of an initial screening instrument. And then if that is positive with response to either of those two questions, then going with a full tool. Once you do that, then that can help you at least recognize any depressive episodes. And probably the two big issues that I would say is making sure that you're differentiating what would be fairly straightforward unipolar depression, and also looking at the possibility of bipolar depression.
Right.
And then the other piece is really substance use disorders, which in and of itself is obviously an important issue. But particularly for depression, a lot of times that gets missed. So it's really important to think about that as well.
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned the PHQ-2. That did come up a couple of times when we finished our quality reporting and looking at, we started to identify there are differences in the way that folks screen. And we're actually going to start a little bit of a campaign, if you will, internally to help folks understand the difference between the PHQ-2 as a screening test and the PHQ-9 as a ongoing monitoring test, right? So once we've identified folks with a positive PHQ-2, follow up with a PHQ-9, so in initial first steps in terms of management, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the first piece to that is probably wanting to also look at, again, the presence of bipolar depression. It doesn't happen too commonly, but for the folks that that happens, your management is clearly going to be very different in terms of consideration of mood stabilizing agents and monitoring for any adverse effects of antidepressant therapy. So that's really important. That can either be done with using some other screening tools for bipolar disorder, such as the mood disorders questionnaire. That's probably the easiest one to use, but again, they're not great in terms of complete accuracy. So I think even just going through the process of asking some of the questions about the presence of any hypomanic or manic episodes, not using that clinical terminology because a lot of times people do get confused, but
right.
Really looking at a duration of a high energy state of either irritable mood or euphoric mood with a lot of the associated symptoms is really helpful. And again, just looking at the mood disorder questionnaire, you can see some of those questions to ask for. If you want to use that tool, it's at least a start, but it does help. I think if that's the case, then a lot of times it is helpful to, you know, get some psychiatric perspective, either using some of our tools that we have now,
right,
through Mission Health Partners, or even get in a consultation if that's a resource that can be accessed.
The MDQ I've used in the past, it can be a little bit intimidating. It's a little longer than PHQ-9. Someone's just completed a 9-question survey. It sometimes, I think some of the pushback we'll get from providers is it's not always practical to just give them both, you know, at the same time. So as you suggested, is it reasonable to just verbally, as part of your history taking, you've identified some of the positive PHQ-9 in the context of that conversation, just asking the questions verbally is acceptable?
Yeah, I think so. I think even just looking at the mood disorders questionnaire, it gives you an idea of what types of questions you might want to ask.
Sure. That's
But yeah, I mean, depending on how formalized you want it to be in using the tool versus, again, just kind of, again, having your radar up, I think is really helpful.
Okay.
So that's one piece. And again, that then leads to a whole different treatment strategy.
Absolutely.
In terms of medication-wise.
If we have done the appropriate screening and we determine at some point there's no evidence of bipolar disorder and moving forward in a more straightforward fashion, still SSRIs are the mainstay of therapy?
In regards to pharmacotherapy, yes.
Yeah.
And there clearly are some nuances and given how common antidepressant medications are used, right. you're often going to run into people that have been on different ones.
Right.
So again, that's where the screening for other conditions is really important, because a lot of times it may be that you're fighting against the current if all you're doing is prescribing antidepressants and not looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah. So let's talk about the bigger picture a little bit. And when we think about whole person care for unipolar depression, psychotherapy obviously is pretty high on the list, but in terms of your, but what, there may be other factors I'm not thinking of, so it'd be interesting to hear about that. And also the role of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is often the one that has a fair amount of evidence behind it, but certainly not our only option, right?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely are other options that can be utilized, such as interpersonal therapy. You know, the obvious resource that you'll need is somebody who has expertise in therapeutic
right.
interventions. But yeah, there is even some evidence of a more straightforward type of therapy called problem-solving therapy that really is something that can even be done over 5-6 sessions, 30 minutes or so. That can even make a big difference for folks. You know, a lot of times there is the mentality of things are so overwhelming, and being able to really focus on one particular problem for someone can make a big difference if they can really focus on how to address that. So that is one among many options that can be considered.
Right. Other strategies or factors in terms of besides psychotherapy and pharmacotherapy?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think even very basic lifestyle things are really important. I mean, emphasizing exercise, good sleep patterns, and obviously that's one thing that's impacted, but I mean, just going through good sleep hygiene can be one piece as well. You know, this always has to be couched, I think, in the challenge of depression, which is that in some sense the ability to feel self-empowered to be able to do these things is obviously very hard. So a
right.
lot of times it does take at least recognizing the statement of the facts, but then connecting with the patient in ways and, you know, in whatever ways you can help to empower them yourself or through their social supports. You know, providing a lot of family education can also be important and helpful. So, yeah, there are a lot of different strategies that can also be helpful as adjunct interventions.
Absolutely. The other thing we couch it is against the other medical conditions, right, that sometimes make folks physically unable to do some of the things they want. It makes it a particular challenge, I think.
Right. There's definitely that piece of it. And again, you have to think about that. And for some folks, the PHQ-9 actually may be a very limited tool because of that. So it may be worth looking at the geriatric depression screen, I believe is the name of GDS, that you can also consider as other options that may help delineate some of those issues.
Right.
This might be a good segue, I think, into the next issue, which is obviously with a lot of chronic medical comorbidity and pain issues in particular.
Yep.
You know, the use of opiates is obviously an issue, and then other substance use in terms of how people are managing with all those conditions. So, yeah, that's the other piece, I think, in terms of how to make sure that you're not missing when you're dealing with depressive symptoms is really doing some good screening for substance use disorders as well.
How, I mean, I can certainly see in terms of the older folks that have had a complicated medical history sometimes end up, I mean, we see it all over the news here recently in recent years about the use of opioids across the population. I think in most people's mindset, they gravitate towards the younger folks that are addicted, quote-unquote, to opioids. But as you pointed out, I mean, certainly the elderly, because of often orthopedic issues, for example, or perioperative issues, end up in a similar situation, right? Unknowingly, perhaps.
Yeah, I would say that's one piece of it. You know, the other piece is alcohol use disorders are quite common. And, you know, one of the pieces, particularly for the older populations, there is a lot of stigma that still exists.
Absolutely.
So it's obviously important to approach these things from a very non-judgmental and watching the language that you use even. I mean, in terms of talking about, you know, addicts and abusers versus people really that are having problems with their substance use disorders.
Right. One of the things we've looked at, I know, in the employed group is using the ESPRT is one tool. But are there tools that you would suggest or ways or language that we should use to help identify those folks that might be at risk?
I don't know how much you've explained that, but just to make sure the acronym's understood.
Oh, sure.
So that refers to screening,
brief
interventions, and referral for treatment. So the first part is obviously the screening piece. So in that regard, yeah, using tools can be very helpful. For alcohol use, there are a variety of tools. The audit or AuditC, which is a shortened version, can be very helpful. There's the CAGE questionnaire that most people are familiar with. There is also the Michigan Alcohol Screening Assessment tool, or MAST, and there is actually a geriatric version for that, for the older population that you can use. But yeah, having a question about alcohol use disorders is important. And then the substance use disorders screening tools are somewhat more limited. There is a CAGE-AID that includes substance use as part of that, so that's, you know, one piece. I believe there is some kind of other audit tool, but it is a little bit more limited. But I mean, again, even just asking the question is probably the first thing and the important one. So once you have, you know, that awareness, then, you know, the next steps are going to be very important, obviously. And it doesn't have to be a huge referral to inpatient rehab. I mean, a lot of times just pointing out the amount of use and the health risks of that, obviously, are important, and just stating that from a very factual and non-judgmental basis is important. If it is, you know, something that is more serious, you know, I mean, again, using your rapport to talk about the relationship that you have and that you're concerned about people, and you do want to really encourage them to consider how they can, you know, be in a more healthy lifestyle, is really important. So those are a lot of the brief interventions even that can carry a lot of weight. You know, if there is the opportunity to use some therapy resources, I mean, even just a few sessions may be helpful in terms of doing those things. And actually, a lot of primary care providers have caught the wave of motivational interviewing, which is another strategy that one can use. And it's merely pointing out for a lot of people that there is a part of them that at least does want to quit, and there's a part of them that doesn't. And so trying to work through some of those limitations can be really helpful in terms of moving along. And then obviously the referral for treatment is going to be for the more serious cases of folks that may need detoxification referral, or maybe needing some kind of intensive outpatient approach, those kinds of aspects of more serious treatment for people that are particularly at risk.
And as you said earlier, I can't emphasize enough, just asking the question is the right first step, right? Because it seems like a lot of times people will, we're so focused on the medical issues, we forget to ask the question.
Right, exactly.
Step one. As we're finishing up, I'm curious about so far, just looking back at our pilot project and some of the questions that you've received so far, any overall themes or guidance that you would suggest to help other folks that might be interested or haven't used the tool yet that might help them use the tool more effectively?
Well, in regards to the themes, I would say it's been actually an interesting mix of various things. I mean, some of the mood disorders issues that we talked about has been one piece of it. Anxiety, I think, has been another common theme that's come up a lot in terms of how do you really manage anxiety disorders effectively. So that's been one piece in particular. I think it might actually be worth us maybe considering how to do a treatment algorithm. That would be helpful. And particularly the benzodiazepine conversation can be very challenging. So I think that's another way that hopefully we can help stimulate some ways to really have the conversation with patients in a way that can be clinically effective for them.
Absolutely. And that's a great project to work on. I think it's a common scenario for a lot of us. We inherit a lot of patients on those medications and have trouble getting folks off, and having that conversation can be difficult for sure. So that would be great. In advice or tools, and in terms of the types of questions or the focus or specificity of the questions, it might be more helpful or not.
Yeah, it does help for me to, I mean, kind of recognize, and generally it's usually either going to be a diagnostic question, a general management question, or a medication management question. So, I mean, if you can narrow it down to one of those three realms, or you know, if there's multiple pieces to that, I mean, which pieces of those questions, that always helps me to get the conversation started and make what information I can provide relevant for those individuals.
Absolutely. And those of you that haven't used the tool, it's accessible on the app, is probably the easiest place to do that. And you can send those questions, and Dr. Peterson is joining us twice a week and going through those questions and sending them back to you. We also have Aaron Cavedo, our LCSW, who is triaging some of those questions so that make sure they get to the appropriate place at the appropriate time. So hopefully that you will continue to find it useful and use the tool as much as possible. Britt, thanks for your time again and joining us and educating us. So.
Thanks, Rob, and hope to continue working with all the Mission Health partners out there.
Great, thanks.